RadioMD.
RadioMD.com.
This is Health Radio with Melanie Cole.
Millions of people suffer from the effects of irritable bowel syndrome, known as IBS. Bloating, abdominal pain, gas, diarrhea, constipation. It can all be so confusing, so uncomfortable. And although the malady itself, let alone the cause, it's been notoriously difficult to diagnose IBS. My guest today is Dr. Stephen Wangen. He's the founder and medical director of the IBS Treatment Center in Los Angeles. Welcome to the show. So, Dr. Wangen, first tell the listeners, what is IBS and why is it so difficult to diagnose?
As you were saying, IBS is really it's a broad spectrum of issues. It's a label that really doesn't define anything too clearly, because anybody who's got diarrhea, who's got constipation, who's got gas, who's got bloating, or just simply has abdominal pain and doesn't have anything else. So you don't have appendicitis, and you don't have gallstones, and you don't have Crohn's disease. If you've got one of those symptoms in any combination, it doesn't matter which one you have, or if you've got all five of them, then essentially you're left with IBS, and that is millions of people in this country.
Do we have any idea what causes it?
Well, I think it depends on who you talk to. You know, your typical doctor is so busy ruling out all of these other issues and making sure that there's nothing life-threatening that essentially when they do that, they're pretty much at the end of their expertise. They're saying, okay, well, we haven't found anything that's going to kill you today or in the next few weeks. Therefore, as far as they're concerned, you're essentially fine. But unfortunately, as people who suffer from these things, like I have, it's incredibly debilitating. It affects everything you do. It affects, you know, your ability to work, your ability to have a social life, your ability to travel, and all these things that people want to and expect to be able to do is altered by these symptoms that, of course, are very, at minimum, embarrassing, but it can be incredibly painful even.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, and it's a story that I hear from patients over and over, and they're very frustrated because they've been to so many doctors, and they're not getting any answers. And that's essentially what happened to me as well. When I had IBS 20 years ago, and I had the same problem, I'd go to doctors, they would say, well, we don't know what's wrong. And I'd say, well, this is ridiculous. There's got to be a cause if there's a problem. You know, we've got to be able to figure this out. And what I learned over the years, as I became more and more focused on this topic and then eventually founded the IBS Treatment Center, was that it was just a label that didn't really tell you anything about the cause, because there were literally hundreds of causes.
Yeah.
And that's
I'd like to narrow down some of those and talk about this blood test. And I had IBS 20 years ago too, and while I've had colonoscopies, they did a barium enema. There's a pleasant test.
Right.
Oh my God, it was so painful. So what about this blood test? Because we don't have a lot of time in these segments, but what is this new blood test that can confirm IBS?
Well, what the blood test might do, at least, is maybe prevent the need for some other tests, because all those tests are designed to rule out other things. So if the blood test shows a positive, it is a much higher indication that you've got IBS, at least in the cases of people who have diarrhea with IBS. It's only valuable in those cases. It doesn't have anything to do or help with any other form of IBS, but it gives you some indication that you probably don't have any other problems. So it's really still like a lot of tools that have been used in medicine. It's a rule-out tool, ruling out other problems and saying, well, we're left with IBS. So it's a step in the right direction, but it really still doesn't provide patients with a great piece of information that says, okay, now what do you do? Now how are you going to solve this problem? But it might help prevent you going through more other testing that would be a waste of time, or like you said, could be incredibly uncomfortable.
Really uncomfortable. So, you know, what else can you do to treat IBS? Let's just stick with that now, because treatment, you know, I had it. Mine went away, and I'm not sure exactly why, because Crohn's runs in my family, but mine went away, and I didn't eliminate gluten. I stopped eating broccoli for a while, but now I can eat it again. So, you know, what are we looking at? Is it the high gassy foods? Do you steer clear of some things that you know are triggers? Fiber supplements? What do we do?
Well, it's the million-dollar question or the billion-dollar question, and when I see a patient, I honestly don't even have a plan yet of exactly what we're going to need to do, because there's so many potential problems. But what I'm looking at is narrowing those down. So as an IBS specialist, my goal isn't to diagnose IBS, it's to solve it. It's to say, well, this is just a starting point. You've got these symptoms. We need to be able to solve this. So what do we do next? And that's a detective process where we say, well, you could be reactive to literally anything. I mean, you mentioned gluten, you know, you mentioned broccoli, you mentioned all these things. Every patient's different, and that's what makes it so challenging, especially for people on their own. They start going on diets that they heard about might be, you know, might be the thing that they need to do, and they're told, well, maybe you should go on the FODMAPs diet, or maybe you should go on the specific carbohydrate diet, or maybe you should do this, or you should do that. And they try these things, and it might help a small percentage of people, but for most people, it's actually not going to be the answer, because they're going to have a completely different issue. And so what I have to do is take each patient individually and say, well, anything is open to the possibility at the beginning. Anything. It could be dairy, it could be egg, it could be soy, it could be corn, it could be gluten, it could be yeast, it could be almonds, it could be you name it. I mean, it could be food. Everybody on the planet has told you are good for you, could be bad for you. Flax, you know, it could be anything. But I have to start there and be really logical, methodical about narrowing it down. And the same is true with all these other issues. You hear about probiotics, and you hear about candida, and you hear about parasites, and you hear about this whole microbial world of the gut. It's a fascinating world, but we need to understand it better. We need to figure out what a person really needs. Because I have just as many patients who feel worse on probiotics as feel better. And there are reasons for that, but we need to actually take that at face value and say, well, if that's what's happening, I need to know that so that I can do some more detective work to figure out why that is. I wish there was a simple answer where I could say, well, everybody with IBS, just go do that. But that's what you're already being sold, because you're being told, well, just go on this diet, or just go take a probiotic, or take this enzyme. Or it's, you know, it's not going to be something that's going to be cured probably by a supplement or by just everybody going gluten-free. For some people, that's going to work great. But that's not going to work for, you know, 95% of the people who are going to try it. So if there were a nice, quick, easy pop answer, I'd give it to you. But in reality, what a person needs is somebody whose full focus and interest is on solving the IBS, essentially an IBS expert, who that's their job. And that's a big distinction from a gastroenterologist whose job is to perform colonoscopies, is to look and scope and look for other problems, but not necessarily to solve IBS.
So if people are looking to solve IBS, do you typically, I mean, probiotics certainly have been touted and trying all of these different eliminations of things and stress reduction, because I've heard that stress is such a big contributor to IBS. And so what do you recommend? We only have a minute left, so wrap it up, Forrest, and your best recommendations about the importance that you think this blood test might have in getting the diagnosis just a little bit quicker, so we don't have to go through so many of those uncomfortable tests, and what you think the best advice for treatment is.
Well, exactly. Stress is often blamed, and I think what happens to people is that when the doctor can't find anything, they get pushed in that direction of, well, it must be stress, it must be in your head, because everything seems to be showing up normal. And ironically, what I find is that for most patients, it's the IBS that's causing the stress, not the other way around.
Interesting. We only have 10 seconds,
sure.
Doc.
So what I want people to do is have hope that there is an answer. But it's not necessarily going to be a simple, oh, this I can just pick this up off the internet. But keep your faith. Keep hopeful that there is something out there that is really the solution to your problem. And our website, IBSTreatmentCenter.com, is full of information and stories about people who have found the answer to their IBS.
Thank you so much. It's great information. You're listening to Health Radio right here on Radio MD. I'm Melanie Cole. Stay well and stay tuned.